Harihi Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryam Karavavahai Tejasvi Navadhitamastu Mavidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivastari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
To page 152. After confirming the creation of Akasha and others from Brahman, now the question is about the individual self, the jiva. Therefore, Srila Vyasadeva dedicates the concluding section of the current pada clarifying the doubts concerning jiva. He proves that jiva, being the energy, is not a creation of Brahman, rather an eternal effect of Brahman. The sentient effect, jiva, retains the same nature as the same Brahman. The same nature as the cause, Brahman. Unlike?
Unlike in the case of... I'm comparing this with the next statement that comes that follows. Unlike in the case of infinite Akashanas.
So the comma would be between Brahman and unlike.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Yes.
Unlike in the case of insentient, in the case of insentient, I guess Akash and others, where the essential nature changes. That the jiva is mutually knowledge and the knower, that the jiva is atomic inside, enters and exits bodies, occupies its location in the heart, and fills the body via its quality of consciousness. That the jiva is eternally conscious, just as the Lord, since the Shastras verify of this, and not being conscious would abolish the definition of the very word jiva. All these were successfully established, refuting the opponent's viewpoints, who declared the jiva to be all-pervasive and with beginning. Right, so they're the different schools, and they're trying to show that all the different, whatever we're seeing, whatever phenomena we're seeing, it's all coming from Pradhan. And so then the Akasha and all these different things, they're the basis of this. You know, of all this and of the jiva. So now establishing that the jiva is separate, then we, how you say, are discussing. Come, have a seat. You good on the floor? You want a chair?
I'll sit. Okay. On the left, on this side.
Okay.
Just begin.
I'll
see. Okay. Okay, so we're in the concluding part of the third pada of the second adhyaya, if that means anything. Like that. Do we have any more papers?
Yes,
can you give them?
Yes, yes.
She'll get you some papers.
Thank you. Yeah.
So Maharaj, can we say that only Vaishnava philosophy say life comes from life, the other life comes from matter?
Yes, means all other schools other than the Vaishnavas, all other schools other than the Vaishnavas, they all claim that the other ones, we see, the Vaishnavas are the only one that says that life is eternal and coming from Brahman. So they're always there. So all other schools, they're all saying that life comes from matter. Mm-hmm. All the six schools are all saying that. Mm-hmm. It's just a matter of whether that saying that there's a reality, it's an illusion. Mm-hmm. You know, in other words, are you actually made out of pradhan? You know, you actually are. Or, like the impersonalist, then, you know, even that doesn't exist. You know, and the Buddhists take it even further. So, the only Vaishnavas accept that the jiva is coming from the Lord. Right? You know, so, we see even in the contemporary religions that even their understanding of where the soul comes, they know God makes a living entity, but there's like a beginning.
Yes.
So he takes some, I think, earth, right, you know, and puts them together.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, fashioning them in his likeness, right? So then the difficulty is that the definition of what is the soul, that's not clear. You know, is the soul the body? Is the soul the subtle body? Is the soul something else? So you can talk about soul. And if you talk about it as the body, there's not a problem. If you talk about something else, there's not a problem. So it's not clear what the definition is. But basically there's a beginning and there's coming there, just like there can be an end. You know? So that's the difficulty, is only the Vaishnava philosophy actually understands that the souls are eternally part and parcel of the Lord. That otherwise, there's so many speculations on what actually is going on. Is that so? There's so much speculation. Next, okay, right, and also that there's a beginning, right? That the soul has a beginning, but the point is there is no beginning. So because there is no beginning, anything connected with it also has no beginning. So that's also then why the position of the jiva that is given as anadi, you know, of them coming into the material consciousness. Because the point is being eternal and on the eternal platform, then that aspect of anadi means that that platform attaining mundane consciousness happens before they come into the material world. Right, so the polluted consciousness, the idea I'm the controller and enjoyer, that's coming about before they get here. Then when you get here, then the material nature gives you a way to express it. Right? You know, it's just like when the Lord glances, there's already false egos there. Then when Mahatattva is manifest, then you have false ego in three forms. Right? Means in goodness, passion, and ignorance. But before that, so that will make up the subtle body. Right? But before that, you already have the karana sharir of I am the controller and enjoyer. That's why even you get liberated from the gross and subtle body, you're still within the material energy. Because you never actually give up the material consciousness. Right? Does that make sense? So material nature is not specifically the dead matter. It's the consciousness that I am separate from the Lord, or I don't need to consider the Lord in my life. You know, it's just about I deal with the Lord's energies and separate from the Lord. That makes material consciousness. That's then the whole problem. Right? So then we're given the external energy to apply that to. So you have the external energy, you have the internal potency, and you have the jivas. But the point is the sarup shakti is above is the Lord's energy. And then you have the feature of functioning as the chit shakti or as achit. You know, or yoga maya and mahamaya. Does that make sense? So the material energy, the pradhan, we won't make a distinction between, but at the same time there is. Because the material energy is unconscious, but maya is not unconscious. Right? So she, through this energy, being empowered by the Lord, then she takes care of everything here. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that subtlety to be able to see the difference between those, these are the aspects that you see is that Vedanta Sutra is dealing with. Because being Nyaya Prashtan, it's about logic. Then you're trying to appreciate the fine points of the logic. Because the difficulty is that there'll be different levels. Because if we have desire, if I say something that sounds logically on the emotional platform, I'll take it that it's logical. But if we look at it from the intellectual platform, it may not make sense. Right? So then the jnanis take, so the karmis generally are quite good with the first one. You know, or it should be logical according to the mechanics of using the material energy. Right? You know, I'm transforming material energy, so therefore the logic of that works. Right? So we call it science. Right? But why we're doing that, it'll be based on the emotions. So as long as the emotional part sounds logical, we accept it. And that's the karma. The jnani then says, no, but this is temporary and this and that. So they don't accept that. But then they'll have, using the intelligence, as long as it sounds logical on the intellectual platform, then they'll say, this is logic.
Yes.
But when you look at it from the actual spiritual platform, the transcendental platform of devotion, then that intellectual doesn't make sense either. They only take it up to the point that their intellect accepts it. But not actually what it is. Because the point is knowledge is revealed. So it's how much you have the potential or the potency to perceive something. Right? In our consciousness, then the pramana chaitanya, our ability to grasp through the senses and that perception, that's given by the Lord. So you can only grasp how much you're given. So when we have the gross and subtle body, what we're given there is according to our karma. But it's beyond that, that comes by devotion. Otherwise, you only have what you get by karma. Does that make sense? Yeah. So these are the subtle points that are there that become lost when you're dealing on the platform of karma and jnana.
Yes.
Because for them, there's a motive. They want to enjoy the material nature, or they weren't successful at enjoying, which you can't be, of course. And so they want to get out of that entanglement. But the point of both of them is their own enjoyment. The karmi wants to directly enjoy the material nature, and that way be happy. The jnani wants to enjoy material nature by getting out of it. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, let's say, it's hot outside. So by getting out of the heat and going into a cool place, you enjoy. But it's only because you've gone out of the hot place into the cool place you enjoy. If you came from a cool place into the cool place, what's the enjoyment? You know what I'm saying? If you go from, let's say, you know, Finland and fly over to Sweden, you know, there's not going to be any difference in your experience in weather. Right? They're both going to be cold. So there's not going to be any, you're not going to gain something there. So both of them, it's off of enjoying the material energy. Just one's in the positive, one's in the negative. Right? So, does that make sense? So one is by removing the negative, so, you know, so-called positive, that you're happy. The other one is by exclusively only having negative, you know, removing any positive. So it's the same thing, just two different sides. So there's no difference. Does that make sense?
I might be surprised they've been asked to see the different approach of consciousness.
Yes.
To try to go above the mind and intelligence.
Yes. Learning how to go above the mind and consciousness. Yes. So that we, going above the mind and consciousness, we get to the point of the transcendental.
Yes.
So the Vedanta Sutra being Nyaya Prashtan, then it is, the approach is a tool that you can use in Krishna consciousness. But it's not the ultimate presentation. The ultimate presentation is Srimad Bhagavatam.
Yes.
Does that make sense? Srimad Bhagavatam is the actual point. So, but everything that's there in the Vedanta Sutras is included in means in Srimad Bhagavatam. But the points that Srimad Bhagavatam is pointing out will not be obvious in Vedanta Sutra. So that's why then it has to be put together in that way. Because he's done Vedanta Sutra. He's written Mahabharata. So the philosophy is there. The religion is there. So technically it's complete. But it hasn't been shown in the context of actually the essence of the philosophy is the Chintaveda Veda Tattva, and the essence of religion as Yukta Vairagya. Right? So that connection, that hasn't been made. So then people think all the varieties of religion are as a religion. No, the religion is supposed to be used for the Lord. So that combination, we will generally call that Saddharma. So they'll just accept the Dharma and they'll accept the analytical approach of the philosophy. Because generally, if it's analytical, we'll call it philosophy.
Yes.
Right? Because it tattva means you're showing the points. Does that make sense? So anything analytical we can call philosophy. You know, someone has their philosophy on life. You know, like Charvak. You know, enjoy life. Yes. You know. Yes.
All right. So, how do we understand logic of the Shastra? Is it like general thing or specific for each scripture? How is it going?
It's all coming from Krishna, right? Either directly as the Veda, or then as coming from the Veda as the Smritis and being documented by Veda Vyas. So, the logic and everything's the same. It's just a matter of some scriptures will be written, especially we've seen the Puranas, that are for what kind of goal people are looking for. So, someone in the mode who's basically their position is the mode of ignorance, then the Tamasic Puranas are trying to bring them up to the platform of transcendence. So, but they have to start there. You know, the Rajasic will start there. So you're using the medium through which is attractive to them as the way to explain about the Lord. The difficulty comes, as Narad Muni points out, is people will only notice the secondary aspects. They won't notice how those things connect to the Lord. Just like, let's say, we see deity of Shiva. We worship him as a devotee. But those in the Tamasic Purans, they worship him as the Supreme. Right? So he's non-different from Krishna, but he's different. You know, it's just like the yogurt is the same as milk, but it's different. But the tendency, because of their attachment, they won't see that difference. They only see the aspect of the same. Does that make sense? So the ideas that's trying to take them through, but because of the emphasis on the secondary aspects, then people will focus on that. You know, it's just like, let's say you take Varnashram. So it will be a point where some will be very, very, some will be very supportive of it, and some will be not supportive of it. But generally, either angle, it's not about its connection to pure devotional service or sadharma. Right? It's not how it's so nicely in line with the philosophy, and it's so easily engaged in yukta vairagya, in the Lord's service, that's why it's preferred and recommended by the acharyas. So we're simply looking at it from the context of our position. We're Westerners, this is not all our culture, and this and that, and we can't do that, as if the we means everybody but Indians. You know what I'm saying? It's just like your neighbor. You don't like your neighbor because he's different. You know, your kids aren't yelling and screaming, his are. And then we're going to say that we're all the same. You know what I'm saying? So the difficulty comes up is that it'll just be looked at on that secondary level. So one's approaching it from, they're both from the moralistic platform. But one is they're accepting the theistic moralism and that you have to do this, and without this, then bhakti is not going to be solid. And the other one is, no, we don't need this. We make up our own morality. We just follow the common morality that's being practiced in the particular circle of me and the few people that agree with me. But you can't say that. You have to say it's universal and it's everybody and it's for everybody and like that. Otherwise, it sounds too selfish. You know what I'm saying? Because then the conservatives are a community, so they're actually bigger. While my community as a liberal is actually me and two or three friends. So actually they have something working much better than I do. So therefore I'll say it's universal, and they won't say it's universal. So therefore I'm better.
Is that,
you know, so that's the difficulty, is that it will be based on the secondary. And it never gets to the primary. The one is we don't need it, and then the other is without that, how is devotional service going to function? But being able to explain Yukta Vairagya, that's not being done. Does that make sense? Because
yeah.
The one means, Yukta Vairagya means anything other than the Vedic we can engage in Krishna's service. And the other group is only the Vedic we can engage in Krishna's service. But neither of them are actually understanding what Narad Muni is talking about. Right? So therefore Narad Muni pointed out to Vyasadeva this fault in his presentation so far. Then, contemplating that instructions, then in his trance, then he got realization, and then he wrote the Srimad Bhagavatam. Does that make sense? So now, having the understanding of Bhagavatam, you approach all the other literatures compiled by Vedavyas, then you will be able to see that conclusion of the Bhagavatam everywhere in all these scriptures. But without the Bhagavatam, or without the, you know, the direction of the Acharya, the Vaishnava Acharyas, you will not see any of it connected to Krishna. Not on the platform of transcendence in bhakti. Does that make sense? You may use bhakti, like even the smartas, they'll use bhakti, but only up to the point they get their results, and after that they don't care for bhakti. So their bhakti is not eternal. So only when bhakti is eternal do we call it bhakti. But we make the point that without bhakti, no other process works. Karma and jnana won't work without bhakti. The problem is just their bhakti is temporary. And also then whether they're dealing with the Lord as Bhagavan, as Paramatma, or Brahman. So generally speaking, if it's not eternal bhakti, it will never be Bhagavan. Because it's not about the Lord. But him as a person. Maximum they'll get is him as Paramatma. So he's God. So you have to follow God's laws, and God being happy, then you'll get to the heavenly planets. And if he's not happy, then you'll end up not so heavenly. Right?
Maharaj, isn't bhakti though absolute?
Yes, bhakti is absolute.
So if they're doing some other form of service and it's not full devotion, then that's not bhakti.
No, it's not that. It's a matter of their concept of bhakti.
Oh, concept. Okay.
Yes, because it, just like a Gyata Sukriti, they don't know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. Like people are coming along and see the Ratha Yatra festival and walk along with it and, you know, stuff like that. They don't know what they're doing, but they're getting an eternal benefit because what's being practiced there is eternal bhakti.
The concept.
By the devotees, yes.
Intention and concept.
Yes.
Got it.
So, but we're taking the smartas, they're following the scriptures, and, you know, there's Ratha Yatra, it's one of the festivals that you perform for the deities, because for them is that you can't concentrate on nothingness, so therefore the deity is then the recommended form, and that should be done with devotion, because, you know, you're supposed to become selfless, so devotion is a very good way to develop selflessness. And so, therefore, then they will do that as long as they don't get whatever they're looking for. So they don't have a concept of pure bhakti. So when you come in contact with the Vaishnavas, you understand pure bhakti. Whether you're able to practice it or not is another thing, but your goal is pure bhakti. Therefore, that's then the acharyas will count that as bhakti. But so
and the super soul too. Paramatma will accept it as bhakti too?
Yeah, yeah, of course. It's all there. And, but so that's what we call those who are religious, they're accepting God but on the Paramatma platform. So they're only accepting that he's God. They're not really accepting he's a person. You know, he can be a person, that's okay. But it's not, you know, it's just like we know the president of the country is a person. But we're only dealing with as the president. He's not the president, who cares? You know, it's like, you know, like that. Then you have those that are worshiping the Lord only on the platform of Brahman. You know, they have the, you know, at best the aspects of the Supreme, Brahman, those things. But for most, there's just how he's pervading Brahman. I mean, how as Brahman, he's pervading everything. So it's not even, so it's like the potency in money, the relationships in the family, or that sentiment of, you know, nationalism, or, you know, something for all the people, or, you know, the charity, these potencies, they're worshipping there. And so they give that, they have that devotion to, let's say, you know, saving the, you know, the blue whale or whatever it is. So that itself, because actually the what makes the blue whale a blue whale is Krishna. So they're giving that devotion there. But as soon as they get whatever is their motive behind that, it's just to do something, give some money, do it, put in some time, or that they saved a particular whale or something like this, then that devotion is gone. It moves on to something else.
Yeah.
So that's the whole point, is karma and jnana only work by bhakti. But because the bhakti that they practice is temporary, it's not called bhakti. Does that make sense? So only when it's in contact with the sampradayic Vaishnavas do we call it bhakti. Where it's coming from there. So we may contact someone who hasn't taken initiation, but he's contacted the devotees. And so, but, so the chit potency is there. Therefore, then, that we would call that bhakti. They understand it, we call it bhakti. They don't, we call it a jnata sukriti. Right? Does that make sense? And then to distinguish, so that we understand, we have bhakti, we have pure bhakti, and then we have prema. Right? Does that make sense? And then to take it a step further, for us, then pure unalloyed devotion. So that's that braja bhakti. Yes?
I think Rupa Goswami, he explains the difference between pratibimba and chaya. So one actually will have a potential to develop into pure bhakti, but the, you know, the pratibimba, it's not. It's just a reflection. Although it looks more clear,
yes.
And it's, you know, some people practice it with a, in, you know, in an intense manner.
Yes.
But it will never turn into bhakti. It has no potential, like you explained. It's completely disconnected.
Yes, because it's just, I think the example is given, you might have an impersonalist who comes to a kirtan and gets absorbed in the ecstasy of the kirtan. So they're dancing in ecstasy and crying and this and that. And it's having the effects, but it's only because they're in association with the pure Vaishnavas. So for them, there's no, how do you say it? Means they're not getting the effect because of their participation. Any effect they're getting is because of the association of the devotees. And because of that, you're seeing those symptoms. So that's what I mean. It's like a reflection. You know, it's not real. But at the same time, it's not that they won't get benefit. It just depends upon their attitude. You know? So if by that association, that impersonal understanding starts to become a little loosened, then they'll start to make progress. But if not, then they'll be stuck there, you know. And then it's unfortunate because they had the chance to meet the pure devotees and they didn't take advantage. So that's why in the analysis of these things, you're seeing what is the real thing and what's not. But it's supposed to be used to understand pure bhakti in context of pure bhakti. And if it's following in pursuit of, because if it's following pursuit of, even if it's not pure bhakti, that doesn't mean it's a problem. It just means it's not pure bhakti yet. So it's encouraged. But if we use this analysis to find where it's not pure bhakti, and then just point out it's not pure bhakti, what have we done? What benefit is there? So we have to be able to pointed out in context of what is pure bhakti and how to attain that. You know what I'm saying? Just like, let's say someone is committed to, you know, helping the animals or something. So that aspect of having compassion and all that, that's the nature of the soul. That's a good thing. But why only the animals? Why not everybody else? You know, expand it further. Take it further. You know, and why is it there? It's because of the soul. They're just taking because it's a good quality and that's what everyone should be doing. But why? Why do you have to be nice? Who's, you know, what's the rule? You have to be nice. Where is it? Why? What's the point? That's the thing. So when you get to there, there's no answers. It'll just be sent in. No, because it's good. But why is it good? Because it is. That's it. We won't get anything more than that. Right? And if you get something more than that, you found somebody who's a little thoughtful. You know, but that will be very rare. So, one's trying to be able to analyze so that one can see what's pure devotion and what's not. So you avoid what's not and you cultivate what is. But you also are able to, in that process, see what's in pursuance of pure devotion. And so to encourage that individual on the path wherever they're starting from. So in other words, you're taking the essence of what they're doing and encouraging that. Does that make sense? But avoiding the, how you say, the encouragement's not on the secondary form. The encouragement's on the bhakti side. But it's being expressed through the secondary, so you show them how to use that in Krishna's service. But it's not about the secondary. That makes the difference between what we're saying is those who understand the religion and those who don't. So Niyamagraha means that you're not moving forward. Right? The opportunity is there, but you're not taking it due to attachment. Because in the one, you can't be too attached to the form of Varnashram, because it's not about Varnashram, it's about bhakti. The other one, you can't be so attached to just contemporary, concepts of morality based on sense gratification. But you have to be able to move forward. You mean that someone is moral, even though it is speculative, right? It's just social. Then that's better than having no morals. It's progressive. But to remain attached to that secondary position is not good. They have to accept that morals are defined by God, not by man. Man may apply them in his particular situation, but it's not about man, it's about God. So that makes the difference between theistic moralism and atheist. So Varnashram is theistic moralism. We're accepting God's laws, and that's where the morality is functioning. And the other is simply what contemporary is going on, what the internet says, what my friends say, and most importantly, what I say. Right? You know, so that's we have to move forward. So then you get to that Varna, but the Varna, you still have to move forward because it's about the position of the soul. That doesn't mean I break all the rules because I'm the soul. You know, it means that I move forward and only those rules that are supportive of me functioning on the transcendental platform, that's where I put the emphasis. Right? But then you still have to move forward that it's not about we're not the body, it's about we're servant of Krishna. Right? So then it's serving Krishna. And then, how is it? It's just serving because he's God? Or is that this is how Krishna likes it? You know, because that's what it comes down to. You can logically explain it, but it comes down to, when it comes to clothes, Krishna wears a dhoti. He likes it. He's God, he could wear anything. But he likes the dhoti. So that's why we wear it. You know, so we do that in normal, just ordinary, mundane life. You know, there's something that, you know, some celebrity or some person that we find influential in our life, what they do, we emulate those things.
Or imitate.
Yeah, imitate. Yeah. So that's the whole thing. It's natural to do that. So then taking on these kind of aspects, it's natural. Why we wouldn't do it? The dress of the spiritual world we use. Right? That's what we would use. If you're not used to that or comfortable, then that's fine. Then don't worry about it. But don't say that it's unnecessary or that, you know, the mundane clothes are better. You know? Because otherwise, if we follow that line, so many people come up with that. You know what I'm saying? It's just, you know, you're trying to create a... that we're saying that, okay, we're trying to create this community, you know, and where you have, you know, everyone is involved in it, is, you know, very focused, is very, determined, thoughtful, efficient, you know, disciplined, respectful of authority, and all this. It sounds good, doesn't it? Like that. Just go back to between 1941 and 1945. That's what they were trying to establish.
World War II, you mean?
Oh, okay. Yeah, and more specifically than we mean the Germans, and more specifically we mean their little, camps that they had for people that they didn't feel fit into this. So it,
I'll be there.
Yes. You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing, is by using these terms, you make anything sound good. That's the whole point, is any of these ones that there. So then how do you define? That's why we have to use Shastra. That's why then we have to hear from authority. That's why it must come down in descending. Does that make sense? Then we can make the distinction. Because otherwise, by intelligence, it all it does is what's the difference? What's the same? Like this phone here, and these two machines, and this rug are the same, right? Why? Because they're all black, you know, or has a black element to it, right? But at the same time, then you could also say is that this has a screen and this has a screen. Right? But then the blanket doesn't. So that way, then it's different. So then, of that, then these three are the same. You know? So you just keep going. So then, of that, then this is... Then these are screened, but they also have this little, you know, poofy thing on the top. So then they're the same. But then there's a difference, because one's facing this way, one's facing that way. You know? So that all the intelligence can do is tell that. And the mind only accepts and rejects. So where would you know where to start? What to look for in commonality? You know? What to look for in difference? You know, what to accept within that, what has been analyzed, and what to reject? So without the acharyas, you have unlimited, permutations, you know, basically 8,400,000. You know, that's your options, and that's a lot of options. That's pretty good. I mean, no one offers you that many options, right? Even you want to, you know, do your own custom Maybach. It's not going to get. You don't have that many. You have around 2.5 million options. You don't have 8,400,000.
And then gone through all those options.
Sorry?
And then gone through all those 8 million options.
Yeah, no, that's the problem. We've already gone through them. That's why we're starting to question the relevance of, you know. Is that work? So that's the whole point, is just to be analytical or thoughtful is not enough. Otherwise, scholars would be the top of the line. You know? But it's not. Devotees are the top of the line. You know, and of that pure devotees, of that pure unalloyed devotees. So therefore, is that the tools to be able to analyze and see, then we see is through the Nyaya Prashtan we can gain that. But at the same time, as without the understanding of the Sampradaya and Bhakti, we won't know how to use it. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's why you for us it just goes together. You show someone how to use a knife, but you do that in applying it, let's say, in cutting vegetables in the kitchen. But otherwise, you could just show someone technically how to use the knife, what's all the different considerations in that, but if you don't show them what to use it for, then what are they going to cut up? You know, their math book or something, you know? No. Boring in class, to chop up the book, you know, nice julienne, you know, stuff like that, you know. So that's the whole idea, is that it has to be used to make Krishna consciousness progressive. Just to be able to analyze and tell the difference and find a fault, that anybody who's intelligent can do. Like that. But to be able to tell how to encourage and bring it forward in Krishna consciousness, that's what we see is that what is recommended. That's the nature of the advanced devotees. That's what sets them apart. Right? The neophyte will see the fault and then they're a write-off. The madhyama will see the fault and then see what's positive and try to move them forward. Right? And then the uttama just sees what they're doing from the essential positive angle and just cultivates that part. So by cultivating that, you're not cultivating everything else. So the useless automatically goes away. Right? So if you just continue that path, then you'll come out in that position. So we see Srila Prabhupada would use that. He would encourage those things and the people are coming forward. Whatever they're doing, he would find what's useful and bring it out. Right? And if they're doing something wrong with false ego, then it would be pointed out. But if it was wrong not with false ego, he'd just find what's right about it and cultivate that. So automatically the wrong goes away. Right? So that's coming from a position of advancement, not from a position of, or from a position of being advanced. It's not coming from just being smart or being observant. They're useful tools, but you have to know how to apply those useful tools.
When you speak about the right attitude, this is the right attitude.
Yes, the right attitude is that. In other words, if bhakti is all that's valuable, therefore, then all the mundane is not valuable, right?
Yes.
So that means someone being distracted by the mundane is also not valuable.
Yes.
Right? So the point is do something that's valuable. Does that make sense? Just like, let's say one's trying to perform an economic endeavor, but you're doing something that's actually not good for making money. Well, so what's the cure? Right? Do something that does make money. Not that, oh, now it has to be pointed out and they have to be shamed and they have to be punished and you have to keep reminding them about that. No. You just show them what's proper and get them to do that. Right? So that they have money, they have an investment, they have something they're selling. Oh, that's fine. It's just that they're not doing it right. So that's the whole thing. Is that attitude of it, it's what's there. It's not that we put value on the mundane. That's why we say if someone does something wrong, then it's devastating the devotional service. But it's not. How is the darkness impeding the candle? Right? The candlelight is there. You can go anywhere and the darkness go wherever the darkness goes away. But we're making it as if, you know, the darkness is coming in and snuffing out the candle. But it can't. So that's the whole point, is it doesn't matter how much nonsense is there that you can move forward. Right? There is no prayaschitta in Manu or in the Shastras anywhere for killing a Brahmin. Right? You can purify yourself. It was unintentional. You know, to some degree. But the point is there's nothing there. There's nothing to deal with it. Right? Does that make sense? So, bhakti is the only thing that can overcome that. Like walking around Tulsi, it goes away. You don't have anything else that'll do that. No other religious process will get rid of it. So why would we have faith that, okay, this person did something wrong, so then, you know, now they can't move forward in devotional. So why would we say it's illusion? Why would we consider that as having substance? So as long as we consider the mundane to have substance, we will be burdened by this problem. That's why you see those who come down from the spiritual world, they are not burdened by this. They don't. It's a reflection of the spiritual world. It's just, you know, badly done. It's like a B movie or something, you know. And so we're not even talking that it's camp. We're just talking it's bad. But they come in and try to, you know, they deal with, you know, so they deal with the original. They're always pointing out in connection to the original. They're not saying that the reflection in the mirror, you have to get that right. Only then can the actual person be correct. You know what I'm saying? Let's say your hands are in the wrong position in the mirror. So it's not that we correct it in the mirror. We correct the original. So there is no substance. So it has no value or meaning. That's what's meant. But we're working through that medium, so we take what's the appropriate, what is connected to Krishna in that, and cultivate that part. And the other part, you just leave. That's all. You're doing something wrong, just stop doing it. That's it. Right? Now, if there's an attachment to it where one's having difficulty, stuff, then you follow some step-by-step process and focus on what aspects are there and analyze it and get into the detail. But the point is it's just the stopping of the what's wrong and doing what's right is what you're looking for. So this aspect of retribution and inability to forgive, all these different things, these come from faith in the mundane. They don't come from spiritual. We can say, no, but it's religious and this and that. It says, yeah, but what's religion for? It's also material. It's meant for material prosperity. It's meant for good maintenance of the body. Does that make sense? Now, within that, but you're supposed to have devotion. So you go to God for all the things, great. But you're supposed to have devotion in trying to develop love for God. So there's not a problem that religion is being practiced. But why should the focus be on that when that's going to happen anyway? Right? It's just like, you know. I don't know. Okay. It's just about the using the toaster example. Is that when the bread's in the machine, do you have to concentrate on that it's toasting and this and that? You have to think about how it's going to be used. You know what I'm saying? So it's not about these things. They are material. But being used in the Lord's service, then it's engaged, so then it's considered like iron and fire. So that's yukta vairagya. When we're dealing with the thing according to the mechanics of the thing for pleasing Krishna, that's yukta vairagya.
Right? It's the means. It's the means.
Yes, it's the means. But if we think that, no, the technique I'm dealing with it, that's yukta vairagya, no, that's not. Because it only becomes yukta when it's connected to Krishna and vairagya when it's for Krishna. So I may be interested to work in that area because I'm attached to it. And it's not a problem from the spiritual platform because everyone's an individual. They serve Krishna according to their taste. So that principle of according to taste and individuality is not the problem. Just that the problem comes, the only actual problem is that the particular taste we have here is not actually our real taste. It's our conditioned taste. But the principle of acting according to taste remains. That's what we're meaning. So seeing that as like somebody likes to do a certain thing for, let's say, like management. So then they manage for Krishna. Not that they're a manager in the spiritual world. But the principle of engaging your nature. Right? That's remains. So therefore then you show how to manage connected to Krishna. It's not about management. It's about connecting your nature to Krishna. If it is managed, it happens in management. So then you know the details and all that. But it's not about learning the details. That's not learning the details will improve it. Because the point is your nature connected to Krishna. It doesn't matter if you're a small-time manager or a big-time manager. The point is, if it's connected to Krishna, it's perfect. Right? Like that. So we see examples of someone, let's say, in this example, someone that whatever their ability, they're fully using it for Krishna, though their ability is very small. It's not very wide. Right? And that's considered to be perfect. Well, someone else, then they have very wide range. I think the example is given is like, say, a poor person may give a small amount of money, but in comparison to what he has, it's big. Well, someone who's quite rich, then they tend to give small amounts. So it's not the same. Like I went to one program, somebody, you know, living in a very run-down part of town. And they hardly had any furniture in their house. You know, the place was clean, but not much. It had a couch. I think the living area was completely empty. Like that, one what just in the front, they had a couch, maybe a little coffee table. I think in the other room they had like a small dining table. And then, the facility in the kitchen. That was it in the house. But for them, when I went and did a program, this was quite a long time ago. They gave me $100. So for them, that's a lot of money, especially in those days, and that kind of thing, the rent was probably nothing. I mean, it was still in those days, you calculated rent by month. Nowadays, it's by week. So then it was by month, because it wasn't so big. You know, so they get by. But the 100 is very big for them. But then I went to this big business people's house. You know, it's like full of like 20, like, you know, I think they're all from India and this and that, doing their business, all the brothers and uncles and this and that, and doing all that. I kind of remember they may have given 100 amongst all of them. The other one I went to before was one family, a husband and wife, that's it. And this was like, you know, 20 relos there. And probably at least, you know, 6-8 of them were already engaged in the business or various aspects of the business. And they gave the same stuff. The point is it doesn't show, it doesn't mean much. Right? So, you're giving, you're full. You know, so like, the spider is kicking in some dust. That's the maximum he can do. Hanuman's carrying mountaintops. That's the maximum he can do. That's very nice. That's equal. But if Hanuman just sits down there, you know, and with his little finger kicks in some dust, then, you know, where's the devotion? And is that what it says? So to be able to see the intent there, that mood behind it and all that, that's what you have to catch. And then it's expressed through that medium. Because Krishna always reciprocates in the medium you use. Right? You deal in money, he reciprocates in money. You deal in time, he reciprocates in that. You deal in, you know, whatever is the form that you use, he reciprocates in that. You know, otherwise, what's it going to be? Is that make sense? Like that. You know, you out, you know, start vacuuming your rug, and then you walk into the kitchen and lunch is ready, you know. Or you start to cook, but it never actually cooks, but your rug gets, you know, vacuumed. No, it's the same medium. That's what you expect. That's just the natural way it works. Is that? So we have to look beyond. That's what we're saying. Prabhupada was saying in the 10th canto that the pure devotee, even though he's, you know, you could say mechanically seeing what we're seeing, he doesn't actually see what we see. He sees how it's connected to Krishna, how it's Krishna's posing, how it can be used for Krishna. And Schnoz didn't come today. That's the thing. He comes in the day we're just doing analytical and this thing. Next, it was validated that the sentient jiva is a performer of actions and not the insentient Prakriti. Right? Even though Prakriti is transforming, so it'll be the material cause. But it's not actually, the reason it's transforming is not because of itself. Dead matter, I mean, it's like the rock does not have to turn into, it doesn't sit there and have this, you know, dire need to turn into, I think, how you say, La Pietà? You know, that one? No? No one knows. Michelangelo's, how you say, the Mother Mary holding Jesus after he's taken down from the cross. Very super famous, you know, carving. So then that piece of marble, you could, if it wasn't carved by somebody, or the jiva, you come back to every million years, it'll still be sitting there. You know, come back at the end of the life of Brahma, it'll still be sitting there. It's not going anywhere. So that it transforms is because of the jiva. That's why then the jiva is called the performer of action. Even though technically he does nothing, but he's the performer of action. Right? You know, it's just like, let's say you come into the house and, you know, you see a crib, you see all this and that and all this stuff that's connected with babies. Why is all that stuff there? Right? Because of the baby. No, baby, you don't have that stuff. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole thing. So it's because of the jiva, that's why it's happening. And because they identify with it, they're called the performer of action. If they don't identify with it, then they're considered performing naishkarmya. So they get liberated by that. Now, if they perform that activity without attachment to please Krishna, it's called bhakti. Same action in all three, but the intent is different. But the mechanics stay the same, because there has to be mechanics, and that's carried out by Krishna's, you know, jnana and kriya shaktis. So, these activities therefore award him with heaven or hell, and hence the jivas are dissimilar based on their karmas was proven. Right? So they're all different because their karmas are different, because that's individuals. Because otherwise they're trying to say all the jivas are the same. So it's just, you know, because basically if everybody's an individual and we're all parts of Brahman, then if, and I, let's say, break the pot on my little, you know, corner of Brahman or Akash here, then the problem is I merge with Brahman, but it's not a complete Brahman because all these other living entities are still in their pots. So if I say they're all the same, then I can, in my mind, and you merge, it's all good. So all these things mess them up. So they don't want to see that there's individuality. You know, because then if that's the case, then is Brahman an individual? Right? You know, and if he's an individual, how do we merge in another individual? Especially since they're unlimited and we're not. You know. So, yeah. Finally, it's established that the jiva can never equate himself with the Lord or any of the avatars for the simple reason that the Lord is infinitely great and the jiva is infinitesimally small. So, one may be amsha, that they're expanding from the Lord. But the point is those expansions are unlimited in the Vishnu Tattva. And in the Jiva Tattva, then they are, you know, 1/10,000th the tip of the hair. That's just the way it is. Thus, in a nutshell, the Sutrakar in Pada 3 has certainly proven methodically and meticulously that Brahman is the cause of inert matter, as well as the active Jiva, the two observable, prominent participants of the created world. This reduces the hypocritical wide spectrum of views by the opponents and boils down the attention of the readers to the genuine topic of Brahman alone, in alignment with the Shastras, and thereby validates Brahman, the cause of creation. Right? Because this pad is essence. Hence, Pada 3 entitled as Jada Jivatmana Utpatti Parihara, defeat of atheistic conclusions on the theories of the origin of elements and the origin of jivas, is very appropriate. Okay, so that's what it's established. Good? Yeah.